You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is Fight Back with Dr. Bob Fitrakis, heard exclusively on the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard. I'm Bob Fitrakis. Fight back, back, back. Fight back, back, back.
Don't give up the fight.
TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio you're in touch with. Fight back. I'm Dr. Bob Fitrakis, and this is Radio, the way it should be heard. Got a special guest co-host tonight in the studio, Pete Johnson, the chair of the Free Press board, so to speak, the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism. Welcome to the studio, Pete.
Thanks, Bob.
And Pete suggested this topic, as he has some topics in the past. We've got John Elwell Potash on the line. John, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Thanks for having me on, Bob. And Pete.
All right. I want to get right into your book because I feel it's very provocative. The book, Drugs as Weapons Against Us. Drugs as Weapons Against Us. And why don't you tell the listeners a little background about why you wrote this book, Drugs as Weapons Against Us?
Sure. Yeah, I've been working. I started working in addictions, doing as an addictions counselor back in 1989, and I was also involved in social activism back then and doing a lot of political research back then. And after my first few years of doing counseling, I started to see more and more hear more and more from my clients, and then read more and more about CIA drug trafficking, and hearing that even my clients would say that we don't have the ability to get the these drugs in bulk from other countries, so the government must be bringing them over. And then started hearing about the Kerry report.
So they're not coming over 10 balloons in a stomach of some mule. They have to be coming in by the crate load.
Cargo ships and planes, yeah.
Yeah, and again, I've written some of this in the past in Columbus, where we know a lot of it comes in custom sealed out into Rickenbacker. I won an award for a article called Spook Air, which was on the crack epidemic here
That's
in
great.
Columbus, Ohio, and all of it was related coming into a government military base.
Mm-hmm.
So,
That's good stuff to reveal back then. And so I met a guy named John Stockwell back in 1990 at a conference. And
One of my heroes.
Incredible.
I consider him the one of the most heroic Americans ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's amazing. He's high level. You know, he was a CIA station chief, and he was part of running drugs, trafficking drugs for the CIA from the Golden Triangle and out of Vietnam. And he said it started in Korea, then in Vietnam, and then it continues in Afghanistan. In the 80s, he was saying that at a conference. But
the opium warlords are out of the Golden Crescent.
Golden Crescent, they call
I mean,
it,
that
yeah.
was the Karzai government. It was mainly the Taliban was destroying a lot of those poppies.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting fact. And from 2000, in 2000 they put a ban on the poppies, actually. But leading up after the Golden Triangle, after we lost the Vietnam War, and the Golden Triangle, diminished in supplying opiates for the world, the Golden Crescent rose up, and the CIA was supporting a guy who was head of Muslim Brotherhood, they called it then, but he wasn't really Muslim. He was, doing all kinds of wild things, but he was kind of part of the Mujahideen that that the U.S. was supporting against Russia when Afghanistan started going a bit socialist. So we are supporting them. They, you know, they say that they turned into Al Qaeda, you know, the truth or not. But either way, so that's where the Golden Crescent started taking over. And the Golden Crescent lies at the other end of a huge mountain range that goes from, you know, Pakistan-Afghanistan border all the way to the Golden Triangle area around Vietnam. So our two, you know, it's, I don't think it's any coincidence that our two longest wars were the Vietnam War and the Afghanistan War. The Afghanistan War, of course, recently overtaking the Vietnam War. And so that's part of how, you know, I think the CIA and the government was using drugs against us, was trafficking the opiates into, you know, our community, of course, into Europe, all over the place. But that's one aspect of the book. Now, we also, there's also, the CIA has been caught trafficking cocaine from Latin America, you know, plenty of time.
Well, you remember those bumper stickers, CIA Cocaine Importing Agency?
Right, right. And you know, and of course, Gary Webb did great work on that, as did Rob Perry.
Both of them pretty much run out of journalists for being some of the greatest journalists in modern American history.
Exactly. I agree. Now, the different take that my book has is the fact that, you know, you can provide all the supply, but how do you get the demand going? And I argue and show evidence of that they got the demand going by getting all of these musicians involved in drugs. And so the best evidence I have of that is through the MKUltra program. Mm-hmm. And that involved, now the MKUltra investigated a lot of different drugs for use as weapons against us.
Well, yeah, everything from interrogation right to attacking leaders. Let's, you know, if we can only dose Castro with a little aerosol LSD to Manchurian candidates.
Sure. I mean, they also had Nasser on that list, you know, that Egyptian leader.
Sure.
They had a lot of people on that list. But there was a great book by called Blown Away by A.E. Hotchner, who was Ernest Hemingway's longtime editor. And in that, and it was a it was like an oral history of the Rolling Stones. But in that book, he revealed that the assistant deputy director of the CIA, a guy named Robert Lashbrook, was over in London directing MKUltra in London to get acid into the hands of as many musicians as possible and to influence them to use acid. And he interviewed an MKUltra agent named Steve Abrams, who said he was part of that and was doing that. And so it's the first time that Mick Jagger used LSD, according to his girlfriend Marianne Faithfull, was at a party in 1967, and the acid actually came from an undercover FBI agent who was working with MKUltra. The guy named, they called him, in one article they call him Dave Jove, but Hotchner calls him Dave Schneiderman. It's the same person, though. And that guy had loads of drugs that he was giving the Stones. So right at that party, the first time Jagger uses acid, the police then come in and frame them all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I argue that, you know, first, again, they use drugs, but they also use the drugs to put them under legal pressure. And so why did they target Jagger? Jagger happened to be him and Brian Jones were the most, you know, most active anti-war musicians of the Rolling Stones, you know, members of the Rolling Stones. They were speaking out against the Vietnam War. They actually attended anti-war rallies. And so Jagger was then under the thumb of the legal system at that point. And they even caught police planting drugs on him in his car after that incident. So Brian Jones had been influenced to start using drugs a lot too, according to A.E. Hotchner. But then he got clean and sober. The problem is that the legal issues are surrounding him caused him not to be able to get a visa to leave the country with the Stones to do the American tour in 1968. So the Rolling Stones had to kind of kick him out of the band temporarily, even though Brian Jones was one that founded the Rolling Stones and was considered their best musician. So Jones ends up sobering up, and he calls up Jimi Hendrix and he calls up John Lennon. John Lennon had split with the Beatles by 1968. But he convinced them, according to E. Hochner, to join a new group with them, a super group. And so that was in the works. And then what happens is Brian Jones, according to a close friend of Brian Jones, a member of the Guinness family, he said that he came up, you know, he went into town to pick up a friend of Brian Jones. He comes back to the house. He's not allowed in the house. People are having some weird party in the house that he didn't even know was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he sees Brian Jones drowned in his own swimming pool. And some guy comes out of the bushes and says, yeah, if you say anything, you're next. So, you know, this is part of what happens is when they first they get these guys using drugs. And then when they sober up, they do away with them. And that's what, you know, that's what I show a pattern of in this book. It's a number of musicians who this happened to.
Interesting. I mean, some of my own theories on those, and I want to know how sure of you. Like, for example, John Lennon,
yeah.
I'm 100% absolutely, totally sure they killed him. There's not a doubt in my mind. I mean,
yeah.
World Vision. I mean, you've got yeah. Mark David Chapman coming out of a CIA essential
yeah,
cult, Fenton, mind control
right.
cult they control. What
did
about
did you read Fenton Bressler's book about it? He was
yeah.
an attorney and seven. You know, he was like a
right.
reporter, and, crime reporter for mm-hmm. the London news, you know, daily newspaper.
Yeah, no, he's got a lot of evidence, and not only that, even the documentaries that are more mainstream. I mean, he was listed as the number one enemy of U.S. foreign policy.
Right.
I mean, the culturally, he was the greatest force for peace on earth. And
right.
the timing that he was killed in that transition, right after Carter,
yeah.
Right when Reagan.